Our second case this morning is case 2021-1168, Ohio Power Company versus Michael Burns et al. For the appellant, Mr. Sherman.
Chief Justice O'Connor, and may it please the court, Ryan Sherman here on behalf of the appellant, Ohio Power, a subsidiary of AEP. I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for a rebuttal. Your Honors, the Fourth District decision on the issue of necessity is at odds with the plain language of Ohio's eminent domain statute. It is at odds with the settled common law in this state and throughout the country about what necessity means and how necessity is to be interpreted by the courts. And the decision is also at odds with this court's Norwood decision, which was the decision on which the Fourth District solely relied in creating its new and novel necessity test. As to that first point, Your Honors, the Fourth District didn't simply misinterpret the statute, it effectively reversed the statute. The General Assembly wrote three necessity presumptions into the statute in favor of public utilities and condemning agencies. The Fourth District took those three presumptions in favor of a condemning agency and somehow turned them into a strict construction against the condemning agency. Indeed, the court went so far as to say that all doubts, quote, all doubts are to be resolved against the condemning agency. In addition to violating the plain language of the statute, that interpretation finds no support in the case law of Ohio or of any other state. The case law, both within and without Ohio, going back decades, is uniform that necessity means reasonably convenient or useful to the public, not strict necessity, not absolute necessity, and that condemning agencies are entitled to significant deference and discretion in assessing necessity. Without any support in the statute or any support in the case law, the Fourth District relied entirely on this court's seminal decision in Norwood. But Norwood was a far different case than the one before the court today. And in fact, a plain reading of Norwood actually supports appellant's position in this case. This court recognized repeatedly throughout Norwood in dicta the propriety of providing legislative agencies and condemning agencies with deference and discretion in those circumstances where we have undisputed eminent domain authority and a clear and traditional public use, which is the case that we have here today. I'll give you just one example of Norwood actually supporting this position. That's paragraph 70, where this court wrote that entities that are properly conferred with the power of eminent domain, which is the situation here, not the situation in Norwood, but in situations like these, condemning agencies, quote, enjoy broad discretion in determining whether a proposed use serves the public. Your Honors, if the Fourth District's decision is left to stand in contravention of the statute, in contravention of the case law, and indeed in contravention of Norwood, it will become more difficult, more costly, more timely, and at times practically impossible for public utilities and condemning agencies in this state to provide the citizens of this state with timely, reliable, and efficient public services.
Counsel, did the Power Siting Board ever approve the appropriation?
Yes, Your Honor, we believe it did. Because the statutory interpretation question there is, what does appropriation mean? Well, the statute doesn't explicitly define appropriation. But if we look at the whole text canon of statutory interpretation, what we see is that the word appropriation is used interchangeably with the word project and taking. Now, the OPSB does not look at individual easement terms, but the statute doesn't require a review of individual easement terms. In fact, this court will search the statute in vain for any language or requirement about reviewing individual easement terms. It talks about the appropriation synonymously with project and taking, and if the legislature, the General Assembly, had intended to provide for a review of individual easement terms, it stands to reason that the legislature would have required the easement to actually be part of the process. But the statute nowhere requires condemning agencies to file an easement with the court. So how could the legislature have intended a review of individual easement terms if it doesn't require the easement to be filed with the court?
But doesn't, if there's no requirement for the easement to be before the condemning agency, how do they know what they're condemning?
Well, as to the OPSB, Your Honor, the OPSB doesn't review individual easement terms, but the OPSB reviews the overall taking, and that's where we get back to
the project.
The project and the taking.
Okay.
So, as I'm sure Your Honors are familiar, the OPSB, it's a very significant, lengthy process. And if we define appropriation as project or taking, the OPSB is, in fact, reviewing both of those. It goes beyond approving just simply the project. The OPSB also approves the principal elements of the take. So, for example, the specific project gets reviewed and approved. The specific utility facility at issue, in this case, it's 138 kilovolt power line. The specific route of the project gets approved. The landowners who are impacted by that OPSB approved project are reviewed, and ultimately the actual
But what happens if after it's approved, then the utility presents an easement to the landowner that's a lot broader than necessary? And what if he wants to put a half mile road to run railroad tracks over or whatever?
Right, you raise a very important point, Your Honor, which is that we are not arguing that courts can't look at the easement. I want to be very clear here. We are not arguing that the court has to shield its eyes and not look at the easement. The issue here is not whether the easement can be reviewed, but rather the depth of that review. And does this statute require a word-by-word review? So in the situation, Your Honor, that you've just provided, the OPSB approves the project, triggering the irrebuttable presumption under the statute. That it gets filed with the court. The court absolutely has the authority under the plain language of the statute to look at the easement and make sure that it's consistent with the OPSB reviewed project. So for example—
But did the court do that here?
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
Did the court do that here, or did the court just defer to, you know, what the experts in the field are saying?
It absolutely did not, Your Honor. So the trial court here engaged in a very lengthy review of every single word of that easement term. I know because I was there and I walked the witness through every contested term of that easement. And what the trial court did is it looked at all three presumptions. It didn't stop at the irrebuttable presumption. It did find that it was triggered. It did review the easement to confirm that the easement was consistent with the OPSB taking, but it didn't stop its analysis there. It went on and also looked at the two rebuttable presumptions. And so the court absolutely got into the weeds of the easement, and the court absolutely confirmed that that easement was both consistent with the OPSB taking, but even going beyond that to the rebuttable presumptions, the court reviewed every single word of that easement to determine that every term in there was, in fact, appropriate and necessary.
Well, what about at some point the court made a statement, essentially it said, well, we'll leave the issue about the scope until the damages hearing?
Yeah, the court there was making the point that the landowner is ultimately compensated for every element of the taking, right? And
which is true, but that doesn't give the utility the right to take property it doesn't need just because the landowner is going to be compensated for it later, which...
That's correct, Your Honor. And again, we're not arguing that the court can't look at the easement, right? I want to be very clear here. We're not saying that the court just needs to rubber stamp it and not look at the easement. What we're saying is that the statute does not require a word-by-word review, and that under both the statute and the express common law, necessity is principally an issue left to the discretion of the legislature and the condemning agency.
I struggle a little bit to see, those seem like two contradictory things, to say it doesn't require a word-by-word review, but we're not saying the trial court can't look at the easement. How else do you look at the easement except by reviewing the words of the easement?
It's a good question. There's no bright line rule that I can draw for you in terms of how deep into the easement the court can go. What we think, the statute, when we go back to the statutory language, is what we have to do. Statutory language talks about providing a general description of the easement. And so it's perfectly appropriate for a court to look at the general taking. What's the purpose of the easement? What will it be used for? What's the size of the easement? Sort of the fundamental elements of the take. Getting into every single word within the easement, we don't believe is required by the statute. But I do want to be very clear, Your Honors. far more important in our view than what this court decides gets reviewed in terms of whether you allow a review of the easement and how deep it goes. The far more important issue before this court is how that necessity question gets reviewed. That is where the Fourth District made its most significant error. The Fourth District construed necessity strictly against the condemning agency. All doubts resolved in favor of the landowner. It is not, I submit, Your Honors, an exaggeration to say that there is zero support for that test and that standard either in the statute or in the case law. In fact, the only basis, again, was Norwood, but Norwood was a public use case far afield from the issues here before the court today. In fact, if you reveal the amicus brief of the Weaver landowners, it's something like 40 cases in Ohio, an unbroken string of case law going back decades in Ohio, is clear that the necessity test is reasonably convenient and useful, and that significant discretion must be paid to the condemning agency. And there's reasons for that, right? Ultimately, when we're assessing necessity, who's in the best position to determine what's necessary for the actual take? Well, it's the agency and the legislature. It's the agency that actually has decades of experience reviewing what is appropriate and necessary and what is required to operate a high voltage transmission line for the next 100 years. If this court, I would direct you, of all the cases, and again, it's an uninterrupted line of cases in Ohio, it's an uninterrupted line of cases throughout the country, all reaching the same conclusion. And they do so on a number of bases. I direct your court's attention to one particular case, that's the Cox versus State of Ohio case from the Northern District of Ohio. It's a very recent necessity assessment, and it goes through the reasons for it. And one of the reasons for it is that public use, compensation, eminent domain authority, those were the issues at issue in Norwood. Those are constitutional issues. This court's significant involvement in public use is perfectly appropriate because it's a constitutional concern. But what this line of case law talks about, and this is what the Ohio cases say, is that's very different from the necessity assessment. The necessity assessment is not a constitutional assessment. It's more of a legislative or administrative assessment. And because of that, because the legislature and the condemning agencies are in the best position to assess necessity, which is a legislative creation rather than a constitutional creation, it is appropriate for those agencies to have discretion. If they don't have discretion, if the Fourth District standard
is
applied.
Excuse me, are you saying that the constitutional right to your property, property ownership, is set aside when there's a necessity, the need for a necessity evaluation, which is statutory?
Not at all, Your Honor. There's absolutely a constitutional right to protect your property from the eminent domain taking, as this court held in Norwood. What we're talking about is the issue of necessity itself is a legislative creation rather than a constitutional creation.
Right. It's a test. Yes. You know, here's what you need to show necessity. But that doesn't set aside any of the constitutional rights that a property owner has. And if the utility is aiming to have an easement and then the easement is overly generous, shall I say, it's not necessary for that easement to be that size, that is something that the landowners and the court properly considers.
And the trial court properly considered it here, Your Honor. And that's the point, is we walked the trial court through every element of that easement. And again, that's why I want to get back to what the most fundamental point here is, Your Honor, is not that
the trial court determined that it wasn't required to review the terms of the easement?
No, Your Honor. In fact, one of the very first findings of fact in the trial court decision was that all the terms of that easement were, in fact, necessary. In fact, if you read the trial court decision, I think that phrase appears two or three times in the decision. Trial court walked through all the easement terms. Trial court applied the
proper
test.
But they're saying, more importantly, that the Power Siting Board certification of necessity of the project, that's all they needed to look at. They got the rubber stamp from the Power Siting Board, and so the court says, you know, they're the ones that look at this stuff. and I'm going to give that the status of an irrebuttable presumption.
The court did find the irrebuttable presumption applied, but the court also looked alternatively at the individual easement terms. And so the court went on both grounds, found that, yes, the terms, every one of those terms that the court walked through on a line-by-line basis was necessary. Court also determined in the alternative that the OPSB presumption would apply, which, again, even in that situation, the court can look at the easement to make sure that the OPSB approval is consistent with the easement before it. And again, Your Honors, I see I'm well into my time, but the more important issue is not whether the court looks at the easement, but rather the test that gets applied to that easement. And that's where the Fourth District made its principal error. Thank you.
Counsel.
Thank you. Chief Justice O'Connor, may it please the court. There is nothing remarkable about this matter or the holding of the Fourth District. The Fourth District Court of Appeals unanimously and merely instructed the trial court to follow the statute and the statutory process set forth in 16309. The only thing extraordinary about this case is AEP asking the court to rewrite the 2007 amendments to 163 and to define a standard not at all at issue in this case. To be clear, the Fourth District Court of Appeals and the trial court, neither one defined necessity in this matter. Instead, the Fourth District simply and correctly found that the trial court had incorrectly applied the presumptions in AEP's favor and did not conduct a meaningful review of the contested easement terms. First, the presumptions. AEP contends that the Fourth District Court of Appeals, and presumably now, as of last week, in Columbia Gas v. Phelps, a unanimous Third District Court of Appeals, all somehow misapprehended the plain language of the statute in 163.09 that a presumption does not apply unless the condominiums board or the regulatory authority has made a determination as to the necessity of the appropriation. The appropriation. There has been no misapprehension in this case, and there has been no misapplication of law.
What about this presumption that the court feels seem to ignore over the presentation by public utility of evidence of the necessity for the appropriation? There certainly was evidence presented of the necessity for this easement, this appropriation here?
There was evidence presented as to some terms. Certain ones were left completely unaddressed, Your Honor. The need for an anti-abandonment provision for herbicide to be used within the easement area, for 160 feet outside of the easement area without any compensation as a tree protection zone, as well as unlimited surface, subsurface, and area rights. Those were completely unaddressed.
The Court of Appeals didn't have any discussion of that.
The Court of Appeals actually did in sustaining our fourth assignment of error. The Court of Appeals found that AEP did not meet its burden of proof to demonstrate the necessity of the easement terms. They always bear the burden of proof under 163.021, and that was not met according to the Fourth District. Now, the Fourth District did remand for the trial court to look at these easement terms and address them, as it did not do so in the first instance. I think the questions of the justices are correct. Here, instead, what we had was a complete deferral to the appropriating authority, literally at paragraph 8 saying essentially AEP knows best, and at paragraph 10, whatever else remains, the jury can determine the extent of the take. That is not the appropriate inquiry under Norwood or, frankly, at this point, 190 years of this court's precedent that a condemning authority may only take that which is necessary. This court has never found that a condemning authority may take whatever is reasonably convenient. And if you look at the instructions in paragraph 69 and 71 of Norwood, this court could not be more clear that the courts of Ohio need to display vigilance to ensure that no more than is necessary is taken and there is not an abuse of discretion or bad faith. AEP would like you to ignore that first duty of the court and instead put the burden on landowners to show that there's an abuse of discretion. 169.09B had an abuse of discretion standard in it. and that was taken out in 2007. That's where you're being asked to rewrite the statute here today, and you need not do that. The legislature took that out, and instead, no less than seven times in 16309B, said that these presumptions can only apply to the necessity of the appropriation. What does appropriation mean? It means exactly what the Fourth District found, the interest in property that are to be taken. That's abundantly clear when you look at 16301, which defines property and real property as any right, title, interest in property to be appropriated. It's abundantly clear when you look at 16305, which is entitled Petition for Appropriation, Partial Appropriations, not Partial Project. And it talks about what we have here, the appropriation of less than the fee of any parcel. Courts are called upon to determine whether the appropriation is necessary. And AEP is not the only qualified party to decide whether an appropriation is necessary. I submit to you that judges, based upon the evidence under 16309, are completely qualified and in fact charged with determining whether the taking, the appropriation, is necessary. In fact, it's incumbent upon the judge under 16309B2 to determine whether any particular property or interest is necessary for appropriation. It didn't take place at the trial court here. Instead, there was, as I mentioned, undue deference given to AEP, and in any event, the rest could be submitted to the jury. This court knows that under decades of case law, it remains the duty of the trial court to determine the appropriate extent of the take. That didn't happen here. The Fourth District recognized it, found that the presumptions did not apply for the very simple reason that the project is not the appropriation. The OPSB never looked at these easements. Ohio Power Company's board never looked at these easements. That's undisputed. Under the plain language of the statute, these presumptions cannot apply.
When they had gone before the Power Siting Board, if they had said, this is the project, these are the landowners, and this is the model easement we're going to use for each of the landowners, and that had been approved, would there be a rebuttable presumption then?
I think we would be discussing the constitutionality of that irrebuttable presumption, but not its application. AEP seems to complain that this statute was not written for them. The legislature said what they said, that an irrebuttable presumption applies if you take to the regulating authority the appropriation. That didn't happen here. They absolutely could have under 4906.06E, I believe. AEP can take to the Power Siting Board that which they deem reasonably necessary and relevant for their application. They choose not to do so, and yet they want to enjoy an irrebuttable presumption, which frankly, in their briefing, they made clear to the Fourth District, and I thought to this court as well, their position is that if that applies, no judicial review, it's over. And that can't be the law of this state under Norwood v. Horney, which did provide to the landowners specific rights then codified by the legislature in 2007.
You didn't raise a constitutional challenge to the irrebuttable presumption, did you?
No, because it was properly overturned by the Fourth District in this matter. And so that's not before this court. And one thing I would point out to this court on the matter of constitutionality is they are urging you to go back to an abuse of discretion standard written out of the statute in 2007. At footnote 16 of Norwood, this very court questioned the constitutionality of that presumption, that abuse of discretion standard. So I would certainly urge you to recognize it was never decided in the lower courts and certainly not in line with your decisions heretofore. And so what I would point out to you is that all of the case law on which AEP relies related to this reasonably convenient standard either predates the 2007 references and revisions to the statute or blows past that idea. And instead, the standard I think you appropriately set forth at paragraph 69 of Norwood, that and a condemning authority can only take that which is necessary. And while AEP may not like some of the scrutiny that the Fourth District gave to this matter in paragraph 71 of Norwood, reaffirming the Pontiac case and other precedents of this court, this court said, that this is especially true, that scrutiny, that strict scrutiny, applies when the state has delegated its power of eminent domain, as has happened here. And in fact, that paragraph goes on to say, not limited to economic development, but instead generally in matters of eminent domain, that if there is any doubt as to the propriety of the taking, it goes to the landowner. And that's all the Fourth District did here, was follow your clear principles as set forth in Norwood. And so, Your Honor, we would ask that you simply affirm this basic construction and plain language of 16309B and affirm that neither of these presumptions apply, that in fact the trial court did not engage in the review under 16309B that is necessary. The Fourth District properly found that, we believe, at paragraphs 57 and 58 of its opinion. And all you need do in this matter is affirm and remand to the trial court for that necessary inquiry. To go beyond that, to adopt a standard heretofore never recognized by this court, is something that not only should you not do, it's not at issue in this case, but it would contravene, frankly, at this point, nearly two centuries of law. And this idea that somehow Ohio is out of lockstep with other states is simply not so. Nearly every legislature revised their eminent domain statute after the Kelo decision, very much in keeping with what Ohio did. The idea that Norwood v. Horney is somehow just some economic development case or only deals with public use, it repeatedly addresses the issue of necessity, which I agree, Your Honors, goes to the very basic right of private property embodied in Article 1, Section 19 of the Ohio Constitution. Norwood has been cited not only by this court in multiple cases, but in over 150 decisions in Ohio by courts in Ohio and from Rhode Island to Guam. It is not some limited case. It is instead the very best recitation of Ohio eminent domain law, and then taken further by the legislature, codified very clearly under 16309B and other places within that statute. And so I think that the Fourth District got it absolutely correct. On the matter of attorney's fees, Your Honor, I would simply point out to you that not only does 16309B1 apply fully, namely, rights were sought, a necessity hearing was held, and the trial court in that instance, these are, I believe, the exact words, ordered, adjudged, and decreed that AEP needed to give up its rights to distribution lines, I think that also perfectly fits in within 163.09A. This was an abandonment of appropriation proceedings for distribution lines, which can have different structures, strung at different heights, guy wires, poles, etc. It was a significant right that AEP sought. Turns out it wasn't necessary. They abandoned it, and they were ordered by the court to give that right up. And so, Your Honor, I believe that this case is unremarkable, but important in light of the position staked out by AEP, that invite you to go far farther than the statute does, to go far farther than your case law does to this point. And instead, I would ask that Your Honors recognize what you've done over the last 190 years in protecting the rights of landowners enshrined in the Ohio Constitution, and go no further than that. To go further, as I've mentioned, is, to use a phrase at issue in this case, unnecessary, but also unwarranted under your own case law. Your Honors, I would merely point out that any idea that these types of appeals are interposed for delay, or this somehow slows AEP down and other utilities down in progress, let me just point out a couple things. First, this court heard that argument in a related mandamus case involving these same parties early last year. A unanimous Supreme Court, this court, rejected that argument. You said it was unpersuasive in light of the right of immediate appeal given to landowners in 163.09B. And as I've mentioned, Ohio is not out of lockstep in revising its eminent domain statutes in how landowners are treated since the Kelo decision and since the 2007 revisions to 163. I believe that the inviolate property rights, private property rights of landowners, should not be subservient to AEP's poor project planning. They know how to pursue this process, and they know, as admitted at the necessity hearing down below, when they've taken too much. Your Honor, we're simply asking that you act in conformity with the Ohio Revised Code and nearly two centuries of your statutes. Thank you.
Thank you. Counsel, you've used your time. You may take a minute.
Thank you, Chief Justice. I want to focus on just one point, and that is what I think is the most important issue before this court, and that is, what is the standard of necessity? How is that to be reviewed by the courts? My colleague referenced 200 years of Supreme Court precedent. This court has never in 200 years adopted in any way, shape, or form the standard recently adopted by the 4th and 3rd districts. Not only has this court not adopted it, it's inconsistent with this court's rulings in Nauru when it talked about what necessity means and what the traditional test is outside of a contested public use or constitutional issue. The law that does exist, both in Ohio and around the country, on what necessity means and how it is to be assessed is, in fact, uniform, and it is contrary to the 4th and 3rd District's decisions in this case. All of that case law agrees that the proper test, the definition of necessity, is reasonably convenient and useful. I don't think you'll find any contrary authority on that point in either the appellee's briefs or the amicus briefs in support of them.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, gentlemen. We'll take the matter under advisement. You'll be notified of our decision.